Track 17, a heck of an innings. Chris Armstrong looks at the full life of W.J. Bill Edrich, DFC, bomber pilot, test cricketer, bon viveur and true Norfolk hero.
Hutton and Washbrook, who had opened, were both out soon after lunch. Edrich had a narrow squeak at 46. But he went on to the verge of a century, although the last run was a wee bit tricky.
Bride or groom, sir? Asked the usher at the fourth of Bill Edrich's five weddings. Season ticket, came the reply from fellow Middlesex cricketer John Waugh. August 19, 1953 was a fine, sunny day. As a small boy, I spent it on the beach at West Runton. In the afternoon, I heard a slight disturbance from the tea room where, in those days, you could pick up a tray to take down to the beach. It boasted the only wireless in the vicinity. The word radio was little used at the time. Running up to discover what the excitement was all about, I saw a blackboard bearing the magic words, England regained the Ashes. Cue for restrained, the 1950s were characterised by good manners, at least in North Norfolk, but enthusiastic celebration. It was, after all, nearly 20 years since the urn had been lost. At the centre of the drama was my boyhood hero, a great man of Norfolk, Bill Edrich, who had, with 55 not out, steered England to the brink in the final game of the series, the previous four matches being drawn. Everyone my age is supposed to remember exactly where they were when President Kennedy was assassinated. I haven't a clue, but I'll never forget where I was when we regained the Ashes. Bill Edrich was a phenomenon, a decorated war hero, a prolific batsman of great courage, a bowler of some menace, a footballer who played for both Norwich City and Tottenham, and a bon vivant, a très bon vivant. Born in Lingwood to a farming family with a deep love of cricket, Bill was just one of four brothers who all went on to play in the first-class game. He appeared for Norfolk at just 16, picked for a match against the touring All India side, which included Mohammad Nisar, one of the fastest bowlers of his time. Nisar took 14 wickets in the match and Norfolk were dismissed for just 49. Edrich top-scored with 20, being the only batsman to reach double figures. It was to be the first of many courageous innings. With customary understatement, the 1933 Wisden reported, Edrich, a schoolboy, battered in promising fashion. 2 years later, he went to Lord's for a trial and was taken on as a ground staff boy, earning a pittance for carrying out tasks such as cleaning all the pigeon droppings off the seats in the stands and selling scorecards, while developing his cricketing skills. One of his fellow apprentices was Dennis Compton, with whom he struck up a lifelong friendship. Playing for Middlesex together, they became known as the Terrible Twins. So closely were they connected in the public mind that in May 1951, Roy Plumley invited them jointly to share the role of castaway on Desert Island Discs, though which one of them chose the Sanctus from Verdi's Requiem Mass is unknown. They are still remembered as a pair by the two stands currently being rebuilt named after them at the nursery and at Lord's. Edrich was just 5 feet 6 inches tall, brave and pugnacious. He made his debut for Middlesex in May 1937, playing his first test match for England in 1938. He represented his country 39 times between then and 1955. He might have played many more but for the Second World War and his occasionally troubled relationship with the cricket authorities. The high point of his pre-war test career occurred in South Africa in the 1938-39 tour, picked somewhat to the surprise of the cricketing press after a poor run against Australia. His tour started miserably, in the test matches at least. The series culminated in an experiment, never repeated, to ensure a positive final result in an extraordinary match at Durban, known as the Timeless Test. The idea was that the game would be played to a finish, however long it took. The experiment of playing without time limits was a disaster, ending in farce when pouring rain on the 10th day made it clear that finishing the game would prevent the England team travelling to Cape Town in time to join the ship on which they were to sail home. With some embarrassment, the result was declared a draw. England might well have won, thanks to Bill Edrich. Edrich went on to bat in the 7th day, with England still needing over 600 runs to win. Having overindulged in champagne the previous evening, he had reportedly had to be put to bed. Given that, and that in his previous test innings he had managed only 21 runs altogether, there was probably not much expectation in the England dressing room. What followed astonished its occupants. Hitting the first ball he received for a boundary, Edrich went on to reach his 50 in very quick time, and on to his century before close of play. The next day was rained off and the following one was a rest day, so it was 3 days later when his innings resumed. He battered on, reaching his double century, and wasn't out until after the tea interval, at which he refreshed himself with champagne rather than tea. He had scored 219, more than 10 times his total in his previous 5 innings. He had gone into bat for what many felt might have been his last test innings, but emerged England's hero. His war record was exemplary. Joining the RAF, after completing his flight training, he was posted home to Norfolk at Little Messingham, where he flew Blenheims on low-level daylight bombing raids. Promotion was rapid, a reflection of the huge losses sustained on such missions, and it was as acting squadron leader that Edrich took off in August 1941 on a raid to bomb 2 power stations near Cologne. The raid was highly successful, and Edrich was awarded an immediate DFC. It was probably during the war years that his leadership qualities became obvious, and these were backed by frequent displays of courage, coolness, and extraordinary stamina. One day he flew a mission to bomb a German airfield in the early morning, and on his return, volunteered to lead another mission to attack a convoy. At lunchtime he was back at base, having had an uncomfortable run-in with some Messerschmitts on the way back. By 2:30, he was batting for the squadron team, scoring 80 in less than 30 minutes. Before the war, Edrich had led a full and active social life. During and after it, he seemed determined to live for the day, a natural reaction to the horrors of war. His post-war cricketing career perhaps reflected this. During the 1946-47 tour test match at Sydney, Edrich went out to bat, having been out all night drinking with a former RAF colleague, only returning dinner jacketed to his hotel just before he had to leave for the ground. England collapsed and he top-scored with 71. Asked how he had come to get out, he blamed his dismissal on having sobered up. 1947 proved a vintage summer. Both he and Compton broke all records in terms of the total number of runs scored in a single season, and between them took the touring South Africans to pieces. But in 1950, his career took a downturn. Playing in the Manchester Test against the West Indies, Edrich got up to his customary social habits. Celebrating a maiden Test century by Godfrey Evans, he became sufficiently inebriated to have needed the help of the night porter to get, noisily, to bed. Unfortunately, in the next room was the chairman of selectors, who took sufficient umbrage at the disturbance to report Edrich's behaviour, and a disciplinary hearing suggested that he might like to make himself unavailable for the forthcoming tour of Australia. Edrich declined, but was not selected. Nor was he selected during either of the next 2 seasons. But England badly needed his exceptional skills against the faster bowlers when Australia toured in 1953, and he was recalled, leading to the Ashes victory, with which I began this story. His fellow batsman at the point of victory was, inevitably, Dennis Compton. Edrich retired from first-class cricket and returned to Captain Norfolk in 1959, playing regularly until his final retirement in 1971 at the age of 55. During those 12 years, he showed his customary courage and captaincy skills, leading Norfolk to a period of success unknown for a generation. I watched many of those games. It seemed obvious that he was enjoying himself immensely. Norfolk players of that generation did too. His enthusiasm for after-overs hijinks was undimmed. An incurable romantic with a propensity to fall in love rapidly and frequently, hence his 5 marriages, he was nonetheless hard-headed enough to make an excellent captain. Hard-headed in both senses. He was frequently injured in those pre-helmet days. His courage and resilience were never better illustrated than when Typhoon Tyson, in the last over of the day, laid him out, fracturing his cheekbone. Next morning, Edrich came out to bat with his head bandaged and his eyes nearly closed. Tyson greeted him with another bouncer. Edrich would have expected nothing less. His enthusiasm for the good life lasted right to the end. He died in 1986, having attended a St. George's Day lunch where the champagne had flowed freely and he was surrounded by friends. Returning home, he fell on the stairs and fractured his skull, dying that night. Somehow, it seemed an appropriate date for this remarkable patriot to breathe his last. Bill Edrick was a true Norfolk great. As a boy, I kept a press photograph of him playing his signature hook inside the front cover of my prep school Kennedy's Latin primer. It got a lot more attention than the rest of the contents.